Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 798, March the 23rd, 1987. It was 4 years ago this evening, on March 23rd, 1983, that Ronald Reagan gave a speech about Star Wars. It was written by Edward Teller, who was on the board of Helionetics, a company that would make a quick buck if Star Wars went through right away. The SEC investigated it and broke up this matter. As a matter of fact, the Helionetics began to lose money. But Edward Teller was right there pumping the president. He knew him as governor from the time Reagan was elected governor in 1966. He made a trip quickly to Lawrence Livermore Lab, which isn't very far from Sacramento, and had been working closely with those scientists who created the atomic bomb, the hydrogen bomb, who came to this country through Project Paperclip and knew if you controlled the sky, you controlled the world. Speaking of controlling the world, I got a new book this week about Adolf Hitler, one of my favorite subjects to study. The book is called Hitler's Secret Book. It was a manuscript that was found by an American officer. It was among millions of captured war documents, and 13 years after it was discovered, it was identified as Hitler's top secret blueprint for world conquest. This is what he wanted to do and how he would do it. And it had been ordered to be locked away. It was written in his own hand and then concealed from the world. And it was published just last year in 1986. Hitler justified why he wanted wars. In this book, he writes that wars are justified to fulfill the needs and aims that you have, your motives. War is one of those tools that is given to you. And he started writing this, he was in prison in 1924, he was paroled in 24, he was in prison in 1923 with that controversial Rudolf Hess and another pal of his, Emil Maurice, and he started writing this plan for taking over the world. Now, interestingly enough, the book explains that a lot of things were happening in Germany in this time period from 1924 to 28 when Hitler was writing Mein Kampf, two versions of it, two different parts of it, and this third book that he was writing. And the person who published this manuscript as a short book said that Frederick Ebert, the first president of the Weimar Republic, died early in 1925 and was followed by Paul von Hindenburg. It was Hindenburg who just stepped aside in 1933 and said to Hitler, "You can have it." Now, after realizing that there were 400 political assassinations in Germany before Hitler came to power, I wonder just how Friedrich Ebert died, how old he was, and he was quickly moved out of the way. The Freikorps were swift at killing opponents, political opponents, making a way for Adolf Hitler. And Hitler decided to abandon the idea of a push, of forcing himself into power, seizing power. And this book explains, as part of the, before his actual script, that part of his mindset was that he would develop his political role into power by a strategy of propaganda and pressure intended to win success at the polls. Now, propaganda is what we get when we haven't seen a president for 4 months and they put him on a stand to give a press conference with these super soft questions that he ends in just a few moments. The whole point is to show you that he's sound of his mind, that he can walk and talk and think straight for 20 minutes. But even people like Adolf Hitler were using the polls to win the hearts and minds of people until they were elected. And Hitler figured that he could appeal to the conservatives, to the moneyed people. And if he called his party the Socialists, the National Socialists, at least nominally, he could talk about economic policies that are favorable to workers or appeal to those people who think in terms of moderate or socialist. He didn't have to be so outrageous or conceal his general area of foreign policy, and that would satisfy the people. Now, most of you during the week saw on some part of television, I'm sure, Assistant Minority Leader Alan K. Simpson from Wyoming, accusing the White House reporters of being sadistic, of doing a disservice to the country. And he said, he says, "What's killing me is you come to a picture-taking session and you have your good old fling, and that's great, your good old fling. But you know very well that you're not asking him things that you can where you can get answers. You're asking him things because you know he's off balance and you'd like to stick it in his bazoo. You remember that quotation. But then Simpson said something else that wasn't covered so much on television that was equally important. He said the White House press corps, this is what he told him, is the cream of the crop. You're like racehorses bred to race. But there isn't any race, he said. Why don't you just admit that it's so damn frustrating for you, you're almost ready to lose your marbles? Well, there it is. The propaganda part, he looks good, his face is clean, his eyes are bright, his hair is slick, but you're not going to ask him questions, and you can lose your marbles, you're not going to get the answers. Now, there's a small, fairly small station. It's not too large, but it reaches quite a large number of people in the northern area. KFJC and David Emery and Nip Tuck do programs there, Radio Free America and One Step Beyond. And it's located in Los Altos Hills. It's part of Foothill College. And the president of Foothill College got a letter from none other than Reed Irvine, chairman of Accuracy in Media, complaining about the programs that Nip and Dave put on. Now, Dave puts my program World Watchers on twice a week on KFJC. He also puts it on in KKUP in Cupertino. And Reed Irvine sent the president of the college tapes and transcripts of their programs. He said, here are tapes and a transcript of portions of them that I discussed with you. So Reed Irvine from Washington is now in touch with Dr. Tom Clement, president of Foothill College. He said the transcript skips around. It doesn't indicate where the breaks are. I did it for my own information rather than the idea of providing it to you. It will give you a good idea of some of the more outrageous statements being made over KFJC, which is the radio station at the college. Now, on the board of directors of Accuracy in Media, there are about six. I'm just going to name these six. And then next week, not this program, but next week, I'm going to do more on Reed Irvine, Accuracy in Media, because this doesn't just affect David Emery. This will come down to Kazoo. I'm sure that they are very conscious and somebody tapes these broadcasts, or one or two or three people, maybe Navy intelligence and the Army and different branches of government. And I know that between these two stations, we're reaching quite a few people. So I'm waiting to see in what shape or form he shows up at Kazoo, which you can't write to the president of the university, but there is somebody there, our station manager, would handle this, and so he may be forewarned that Reed Irvine's ilk are going to be objecting to the same kind of information I put out that David and Nipta do. As a matter of fact, I go even further because they read whole articles and chapters of books, and I cover a broader range of a lot of material that is based upon past research, which they haven't done, which could also get the feathers of Mr. Irvine flowing around in the wind, because the people we are talking about now on the air go back to the OSS and World War II and have very strong connections to the past and are affecting our future, the Contragate right now, which I'm very deeply involved in studying. Now, on the board of this, some of the members of the board, I'll list one is Midge Dector. She's the mother of Elliot Abrams, the fellow doing all the Contragate arming and sending the CIA and the money from the Sultan of Brunei that never got to them. He's been in charge of the Central American policy. She's married to Mr. Potterhertz, the editor of Human Events, the conservative publication. Ellen Garwood is on the board. She's the lady who buys helicopters for John Singlau for the Contras. Carlton Heston, you know. Claire Booth Luce is on the board. She's also a Knight of Malta. And the P2, Licio Gelli and Roberta Calvi, Francesco Pazienza, the whole team were and are, Michele Sindona, the dead ones were, the live ones are heavily involved in activities that affect death squads in Central America, not just the Contra operations, but actual mass killings throughout Central America in Nicaragua, Guatemala, Honduras, Brazil, Argentina, Bolivia, and so forth. Claire Booth Luce is a woman who's on the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board that makes policies, and as I say, a member of the Knights of Malta. Admiral Thomas Moore is on the board. There are three people on the board of Accuracy in Media from Western Goals, and you remember how many broadcasts I have done on Western Goals. I believe I'm the only one in the country that has delved at it at length as these various scandals were coming down with their computers into the police department and filling those computers going where I said they went right to the military in Washington. As soon as Larry McDonald was killed, when the Korean airline went down, Western Goals was in the hands of Carl Spitz Channel, the very controversial man who has all the funding charts connecting the Moon Organization, CASA, the Lake Resources, the Stanford Technology Team, the money in Switzerland, the money in Panama, the Cayman Islands, affecting our political elections here, making movies and TV and spot ads, defeating candidates who don't like Star Wars, who like don't like the Contras. Channel is very important internationally, domestically, and he's the head of Western Goals. And on the board of Accuracy and Media are Admiral Thomas Moore and Edward Teller and Eugene Wigner. Going down the line, they list them in alphabetical order. Henry Salvatore is on the board of Western Goals. I mentioned him last week in terms of being the man, along with Patrick Frawley, who helped, in quotes, discover Ronald Reagan, and he worked closely with Michael Deaver and Mr. Hannaford, and I want to do more about them at great length probably next week also, on their role in getting Ronald Reagan elected, the same scandals that worked around the Nixon campaign, the 1968 or 72 elections. It takes a team and a team of dirty tricks to get the presidents in office, and Salvatore is one of those who knew the low mental capacity of Ronald Reagan, but knew the great image or photo opportunity, and as Congressman Simpson said, you're getting photo opportunity and you can just go crazy. That's all you're going to get are the pictures. William Simon is on the board of Accuracy and Media. He's a Knight of Malta from the Vatican with, I call him the late, the brain absent now, William Casey, with Alexander Haig, with Claire Luce, and a cast of others. William Simon is on the board of Accuracy and Media. And Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, the man who wrote the Star Wars speech for Ronald Reagan 4 years ago, he's on the board of Accuracy and Media. And Dr. Eugene Wigner, the close associate to Reverend Moon, and all these people are closely linked to Reverend Moon, John Singh Lab, the World Anti-Communist League. As I say, I'll do more next week. So Dr. Eugene Wigner is on this board. He's the German who worked with Albert Einstein and with Edward Teller in making atomic weapons, and now he's prestigious and honored and very, very close to Arnold de Borchgrave and Reverend Moon and the Moon Operation. So this is a who's who of people whose bases we have touched on our programs, on World Watchers for me, on One Step Beyond, and the Radio Free America up there. So it's very natural that a man like Reed Irvine should come in. But his arguments against our programs, if you talk about accuracy in media, we could just put them against the wall. We have more truth than they have said in their entire lifetime we can put out in 1 hour. So it's really hilarious that he gives himself the title as watchdog, but the purpose is to come down on the people who are exposing assassinations and coups, plans to overthrow a country and assassinations, and that's what all of this is about. I got my Tower report. It's interesting reading. There's a lot in it in spite of the very people who are on the board, and as I said last week, I'm not sure there's a lot in there because they wanted it to come out. And they had access to Oliver North's computers, and a lot came out that they didn't even intend to handle. As soon as I open the report, I go over to the introduction, and this is the way I'm going to read you 5 sentences from the introduction, and then I'm going to read you the way the introduction should be written if I were writing an introduction to the Tower Report. This is the way it begins. It's about 6 sentences, and I think they're fairly hilarious. 1, John Kennedy was assassinated, period. 2, Lyndon Johnson was shouldered, whatever that would mean, into retirement by massive disenchantment with the war in Vietnam. 3, Richard Nixon was sunk by Watergate, resigning in the face of probable impeachment. 4, Gerald Ford was doomed by his pardon of his predecessor, Nixon. 5, Jimmy Carter ran aground on the shoals of Iran. 5 presidencies prematurely terminated. For almost 6 years, Ronald Wilson Reagan seemed destined to break the string, seemed indeed to be one of those rare politicians blessed with the ability, so admired by Machiavelli, to identify himself with a national purpose. But then came the series of events for which we have called the Iran-Contra affair. They go on to say in the introduction, Iran-Contra is not Watergate, and it seems highly unlikely, as this is written, it will force Reagan out of office, but it has profoundly affected relations in the United States with his friends as well as foes. It has crippled the Reagan presidency. It has crippled the presidency, perhaps paralyzed it. It has changed the way American public and the world look at the president, perhaps forever. Now, the parts left out of it, I would put, they begin, John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and I would continue. The assassination conspiracy was never solved. The House Select Committee on Assassinations reluctantly concluded, even with suppressed evidence and major witnesses not called, there was a conspiracy, and that it could have involved the Mafia and Santos Traficanta, who just passed away this past week, and the Bay of Pigs Cubans and their bosses, and they stopped by way of Dallas before escalating the Vietnam War in order to increase their narcotic traffic from Southeast Asia. The second sentence they have, Lyndon Johnson was shouldered into retirement by massive disenchantment with the war in Vietnam. I would say Lyndon Johnson was the subject of a play on Broadway, he and his wife, titled Macbeth by Barbara Garson. She properly identified the mental condition of Lyndon Johnson and Lady Bird after the assassination of John Kennedy and their participation or knowledge of the murder of President Kennedy. Johnson, who was appointed to the Warren Commission by Richard Nixon, it was Ford who was put on there by Nixon. Johnson was appointed to the Warren Commission by Alan Dulles, the CIA director in charge of the Bay of Pigs, in charge of the U-2 flight that had elements of Lee Harvey Oswald, and even Edwin Wilson worked with Alan Dulles on the U-2, the Wilson who's now in jail, who worked with the Contragators. And Lyndon Johnson appointed John J. McCloy on the Warren Commission, and he was recognized as being part of the assassination cover-up handling Lee and Marina in the Soviet Union. That was his area. I would say the Vietnam War drove Johnson out of office. The Vietnam War escalated the day of Kennedy's funeral, November 24, 1963. The Vietnam War made multimillionaires of defense contractors, news media, narcotic agents. Then Richard Nixon, he said, was sunk by Watergate. I would add Nixon was in Dallas, November 23, 1963. Nixon's direct link to persons involved in the assassinations, from the John Birch Society to Nazis to mafia networks, is well documented. Nixon set up the Mullen Associate office in Washington to steal the election in 1972. Watergate was National Security Council. It was the Cambodia bombings with all of Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig's activities. Watergate was wiretapping, drugging opponents, having agent provocateurs for election victory, using the COINTEL program, using the MK Ultra mind control program. Nixon won the 1968 election because Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King were murdered in April and June 1968, and riots in Chicago turned favorable for Nixon. Having lost the election in 1960 to John Kennedy, he would be back in the White House after tucking John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy into their graves. Nixon, who was in charge of the Bay of Pigs, worked with the Contragators and the drug traffickers all of his political career. Then they say Gerald Ford was doomed by his pardon of the predecessor. I would say Gerald Ford, assisting the Central Intelligence Agency, was a handpicked member of the Warren Commission. Ford had to pardon Nixon for past crimes. They were so long. Ford became a multimillionaire. He never could have won the presidency. As for Jimmy Carter, the introduction says, Jimmy Carter ran aground on the shoals. Where in the world did they get these words to describe what Jimmy Carter ran aground of? And who wrote this book? Johnson shouldered into retirement, Nixon sunk, Ford was doomed, and Carter ran aground of shoals. I don't even know what that means. I look up shoal in a dictionary to see if I was right, because it's a shallow place for fishing. Well, I know Jimmy Carter likes fishing, but run aground on the shoals of Iran, the fishing places that he goes to are far from Iran. Carter is part of the Trilateral Commission with Griffin Bell, his close friend, who became Attorney General, and with Zbigniew Brzezinski. They kept the throne warm until Reagan came into power, but these other messes were not yet solved. They ran aground, Carter ran aground, not in the shoals of the sea or Iran. He ran aground with General Secord and John Singlaub and the Iranian hostage crisis. This was orchestrated and sabotaged. The capturing of the hostages would have been impossible. 13 of the 30 people working in the Contra operation with Albert Hakim and Secord, as I mentioned last week, were involved with the fatal flaw, the death of pilots on the helicopter that were supposed to go into Iran but never made it. Now, they say Reagan, a rare politician admired by Machiavelli to identify himself with a national purpose, came to be one of the blessed and has fallen. And I would say, what is the national purpose? Who is writing this book to tell us that Reagan is part of the national purpose? Remember the Challenger explosion? Who asked that to go down? He planned the murder of Gaddafi and the invasion of Libya, and the documents are all available for that. He planned the coup in Iran, and there are many documents to show the real purpose was to overthrow the country and get rid of Khomeini. He achieved the Grenada invasion. He killed Maurice Bishop. He killed about 123 people in a mental hospital and more on the ground fighting. He's planning the invasion of Nicaragua, where we're having our army there right now for training sessions with the Honduras. They planned killing the U.S. ambassador to Costa Rica. He set up hit teams, assassination teams. I really believe, and there's much evidence to support the fact that they were behind the massacre and the downing of KAL-007. And certainly Franklin Camper and the FBI and G. Gordon Liddy and this team go way back to espionage of blowing up planes, and Franklin Camper has a training camp where Sikhs were trained there and were linked to Air India, where those people, masses of them, were killed on that airplane. This is a group of secret bank accounts that are not so secret anymore. You get to see their names more. In the research books, we know their names, but you don't get them as household words. They have money in Switzerland, Panama, Cayman Islands. Money comes from all over the world to the agencies to achieve whatever they want. They stole the election in 1984, really, Carl Spitz Channel. Literally stole the election for Reagan and his supporters. The GOP won most of the governor positions, which is interesting. And they also accomplished a coup in Mozambique and a murder there. And I'm going to be doing more about their murders and coups. But Reagan came close to achieving our national purpose. I'd be interested to know who the author was who said that this administration is achieving what is our national purpose. Or maybe it is, and I'm missing the point. They may be right, and I'm wrong. Now, continuing with John Tower, because of his role in assisting Lee and Marina Oswald to get to Dallas forthwith in the best interest of the United States, her papers were all hurried through. There was an article in the New York Times, a small one, March 18th, titled "Display Oswald's Rifle." And this has to do with rewriting history and telling us what we are or aren't, or who runs our country, who kills our presidents. These people never give up reinforcing what they want you to remember forever. The article says the forthcoming 25th anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy has raised suggestions that the National Archives put on public display various items related to Kennedy's death. Lee Harvey Oswald's rifle and diary, and there were no fingerprints on the rifle any way, shape, or form that could identify him with his rifle. His diary has never been fingerprinted, or in the 26,000 pages the Warren Commission published, there was no discussion about verifying that he had in fact written it, and it is totally out of context with the actual letters he did write or spell. They said they want to put the diary and the president's blood-stained shirt and the bullet that is believed to kill him. That's that pristine bullet, 399. The government remains highly solicitous of Kennedy's memory. There's an unspoken consensus and attitude that prevails, said the archivist, Marion M. Johnson, and the man in day-to-day charge of several hundred file boxes and crates of the Warren Commission material, said that the items are available only to researchers upon special application, and they're deciding whether to put these physical items out for you to see. The person, again reaffirming the person in charge of letting you have permission to go through these items, hired by the Kennedy family, is Burke Marshall, a law professor at Yale University. Now, I'm not really aware that those things belong to the Kennedy family. I've said this before. Our president, the president of the United States, was killed. I suggest on the 25th anniversary of John Kennedy that the National Archives put all the papers out without destroying or classifying them and find out if Lee Harvey Oswald even held a rifle, which he didn't, and that pristine bullet that went through John Kennedy and John Connolly and exited whole right on a bench that was created out of the fabric of Senator Arlen Specter. It's a disgrace. But what they want to do now is put these things out in, I guess, the Smithsonian Institute or somewhere where you can go see the items. And you notice they want to show Oswald's rifle, but they don't tell you how he got it. And I think it's time we go back again to that history. It's already been 25 years. And for those people who researched it, they're completely they're giving up or they're snowed under and don't keep up with this material. And so a new generation comes along and can see Oswald killed Kennedy. I see his gun. I see a bullet. I see a shirt with blood on it. Therefore, he killed the president. Here's a diary, a bullet, a gun, and a shirt. So you can be sure that Oswald played the role, and each of these items can be ruled off as having any part of the fabric. It's a lot of the fabric of the lie of the Kennedy assassination, but it has nothing to do with the murder of John Kennedy. Now, what difference does it make with all this Contragate coming out and all this other material pouring out? What difference does it make who killed Kennedy? Or somebody called a program I was on last week, what difference does it make if Hitler was alive or not? Well, the purpose of an assassination of a head of state is to take control, to change power. And I can assure you, the power always gets for the worse. When a assassination is accomplished, we are not treated better, because the way you get better is to have fair elections and choose who you want to run and win. And when a person uses the process of murder, they take away the better. And it's very important to know that there were links to the Kennedy assassination, to Watergate, and those were never solved. The real purposes of Watergate were never properly allowed to be exposed. And now Contragate is built on the very same teams and people that were involved with the Kennedy assassination. And this continuous flow of names and agents and bank accounts just overlaps too much for people to ignore it. And when it's time to really study it, then the Congress can ask the archivist, or the archivist can say, we will give you a photo opportunity. Look at the physical evidence, and you won't have to look at the material evidence or study it, because we'll let you see the bullet and the gun and the bloody shirt and the diary, so therefore don't worry about the rest of the history or facts. Now, the facts go back to OSS. They go back way before Bay of Pigs, and at the time of Watergate, Richard Nixon was caught saying these people go back to the Bay of Pigs. The team that did these murders that's involved with Contragate now, as I say, goes back to OSS, and I probably was the first published person to write an article in The Realist linking Watergate to the time when Reinhard Gehlen, Nazi's chief of intelligence of the East, came to the United States, and making the continuous connections and processes by which these political assassinations happen, and the assassination team get caught once in a while, and Watergate was one of them, and Contragate is the other. Now, in Southeast Asia and the OSS, there were people working there together that were very important to the future that we're living through now. One was E. Howard Hunt, who's alive today, and the other is General John Singlaub, who's very much part of the Contragate, Irangate story. The other is Thomas Kleins, who was important in Southeast Asia and in the CIA. And the fourth one is Mitchell Werbel, who passed away a few years ago. Two people died, one this week and one 3 weeks ago, that worked with Hunt and John Singlaub and Thomas Kleins and Mitchell Werbel. One is Edward Lansdale, and the other is Santo Trafficante. And I can't afford to pass up those names now. I'd like to do hours of broadcasts with you, but they are prominent in the books on the assassinations, and you can go to your library and look in the index and get a lot of material. Now, Hunt and Singlaub and Kleins and Werbel worked with Lansdale and Trafficante, and over them and above them, of course, was William Donovan of the OSS, Alan Dulles of the OSS, William Colby of the OSS, and Otto von Bolschring of the OSS, and Bolschring joined the S. He was in the Waffen SS and joined the SS, and of course James Angleton. But these people were very important as a team, and their continuity continues today. I'll take a 1 minute break and show you the continuity of these people going back to pre Bay of Pigs activities. And through the months and year that follows, I'll continuously update their activities as they evolve in Central South America from Southeast Asia and are affecting our policies there now and helping the president carry out what he intends to do in those particular areas.